This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. And it's the first one for me. The first podcast that I've done this season. Lainey.
I'm loyal.
Yes. Loyalty bonus points. I'm racking them right in now, because I have to admit, I've been out of the picture. Lainey has been there in the hot seat, done a fantastic job, and kept me entertained as I was travelling all around America. I mean, what happened? What happened, Lainey? I went for the summer tour with the bees, and I loved it so much, I came home and I thought, let me go back again and have some more of that.
Bees not coming home.
Yeah, that's right. Greedy. I was greedy for it, actually, as well, like I said to you.
You've missed a fair bit, mate. Unbeaten starts of the season.
That's right.
Win at Fulham.
That's right.
And a bucket load of draws, mate.
That's right. A bucket load of draws.
But we'll stick to the unbeaten best ever start to a top flight campaign. We'll stick to that for the moment.
That's right. And the thing about it as well is, because I mean, for this year, I just had to make a promise to myself. I thought, I'm not going to be tied down by football fixtures. I'm going to book the holiday with the family. So I booked it ages ago. And obviously the Brentford tour came in and I thought, oh no. Right, I'm going to America. I've already booked to go to America, but I couldn't miss out. So I booked that American tour, went on that. That was great. And then, like I said to you, I booked to go away with the family. But the one thing I thought, especially speaking to all our American chums, our friends out there, one thing I realized, I think, is that unlike the olden days, unlike the good old days when we were in the lower divisions, the one thing I know is that you basically never miss a Brentford game anymore, wherever you are, or especially if you go to the States or whatever like that, because if you're in the Premier League at the moment now, literally every game is on the box. So I mean, I did 6 cities in, I think, 6 cities in 3 weeks, and I literally was traversing and just finding bars to bowl up into, 9 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock in the morning, get your beer in, sit down, start talking to local characters about football and watching the game. And it was a completely different experience. I'm not saying that I want to do it every single week, but it was quite novel. It almost reminded me back in the day. I don't know if you remember when we used to, I don't know if you used to come down when I used to live in Stoke Newington, and they used to have all these kind of satellite dishes. The pubs used to illegally show football games at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I didn't even really like Premier League then, but I loved going to the pub at 3 o'clock because it's full of characters who crammed themselves inside there basically for a bit of illegal football watching, like, you know. And it was such a great laugh, like, you know, sort of kind of Hasidic Jews, you know, as well as also having sort of kind of like local kind of like, you know, working class lads, as well as girls, as well as middle class sort of bankers, as well as sort of local sort of West Indian community, all inside this pub, crammed in to kind of watch, you know, sort of kind of, you know, the football, Arsenal playing whoever. And it was actually quite a laugh, and it sort of reminded me of that, you know. It's talking about sort of communities. It's like there's almost like, and Americans would kind of understand what I'm talking about here. There's a sort of kind of, I hate to use the word hipsterish about it, but it's very, very niche in America. And people who are into Premier League football, they're kind of like we're into something different from everybody else in America. So you can kind of feel that they feel that there's this almost like little club that they're part of. So they don't even talk about their team. They just talk about Premier League. And I have to admit, the one thing that really did bug me is that you're sitting inside a bar and you're trying to watch a game and everyone's just talking. And they're talking nonsense, right? You know what I'm saying? They're just talking absolute. And doesn't that actually kind of sort of like...
Well, you should have fitted in pretty well, shouldn't you?
Oh dear, and you're sort of sitting down there and they're not even talking about the football half the time. They're just talking about stuff or something else different, and it was a totally different experience, but it was actually really, really interesting. And I went to St. Petersburg, went to a bar down there, Brentford, buying a Brentford shirt behind the bar, put the TV on for me or watch the game, you know, got a few characters, Devon from Man United, America Sports Club came down and watched a game as well and stuff like that. So everywhere I went, there's a different bar and you just go, I'm watching the Brentford game. Then they'll go, right, here you go. That's your TV over there. TV number 7, like, you know, in the corner, you know, where's the Man United game and the Arsenal game and all that, or on the big TVs. Brentford always stuck in the corner somewhere, like, you know. But I did go to the New York City supporters bar in New York. That was in my first day there. And I had a great time. Watched the Tottenham game there. You probably heard the podcast. It's on PrideOfWest.London. And there's probably about 30 odd bees inside there. And there was singing and there was all sorts of stuff going on. And it was a great, it was a great morning. But the one thing I have to say, and the last thing I'm going to say about this, I saw a game in, I went up to, you know, I was in Charlotte. As you know, I do a bit of Charlotte actually as well. So I went to a game in Charlotte, got to the pub at 10 o'clock, watched the Bees game, the Crystal Palace game with a Crystal Palace fan, sat down there, had a few beers. Game finished at 12. Then afterwards at 12, a Burnley fan came in. He was from Burnley, so I started chatting to him. Then I had another couple of beers with him from 12 to... I went out and it must have been about 60 degrees, it felt like, outside, like absolutely blazing hot. And then I was going to go and watch the baseball game. And then after that, I was going to go and watch Charlotte FC play, right? They're playing LAFC as well. So I went to the bar at 4:30. By 6 o'clock, I literally almost couldn't walk. You know what I'm saying? I was thinking, I need to go to bed. Because I was struggling. I was all over the place, and all these Charlotte fans going, "Hey, Billy, it's good to see you. Yeah, here's another beer." And like, I'm like, "Oh God!" So, American culture, I have to admit, your football culture, it is dangerous watching.
Well, it's the time difference, isn't it? Yeah, it's early starts and beer, mate. I think that's the problem. I think you would be falling over if you started drinking at 9 o'clock any morning and carried on till 6 in the evening.
And talking about the Everton game next week, lady, are you up for it?
yeah, let's do that. I'll see you in the Globe about 8:30, something
that's
like that.
Right, which is all good. Anyway, we're gonna flip it back to UK, back to the UK. And like I said to you, Laney, it's been here, he's watched all sorts of games, and like I said to you, last weekend there was no football. Gutted. Coming back to the UK and I was thinking, I'm really potty for it. There was no football because it was International Week, wasn't it, Laney? And a few little interesting things. I mean, I think the first thing is about how many Brentford fans jetted on a plane and sort of got the old carbon footprint going on last weekend, didn't they?
Well, there's 18 of our players that went off and represented their countries, which is, you know, it's just incredible. You know, we've talked before about, you know, when we used to get excited that we would have one. Johnny Buttigieg playing for Malta was quite a big thing in the sort of like 87, 88, 89. And then it was like Gordon Sweetser played for Canada, I think. And, you know, it was like we got an international. And now we've got, you know, it's almost like who isn't an international? You know, it's probably because they're just a little bit too old or they're banned. You know, it's a measure of the quality that we've got, and strength and depth. And, you know, they're playing all around the world. You know, Brian Mbeumo scored last night against Burundi to help Cameroon qualify for AFCON. And
which is for Redford is kind of not a great thing though, isn't it?
It's not great because we've, you know, Wisa's Democratic Republic of Congo team, they've qualified as well. So there's two of our forwards out for you know, a chunk of January.
Frank the Tank.
Yeah.
Do they qualify?
But,
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure if Nigeria are through yet. I'll have to look at those results. But yeah, no, it is going to deplete us at a time where, you know, I know we're going to talk about Ivan Toney in a minute, but, you know, he's back potentially, but it'll be for one game right at the end. So we haven't got a lot of league fixtures. We've got the FA Cup. If we get through the FA Cup third round, it will be great, because that means we get through to the fourth round. It means there's not a league game to worry about points there. Not that I'm worried about points, but I mean, we're all on the same page here. You know, our league stature and doing well in the Premier League is kind of the be all and end all, really. And if we can get a cup run, whether it's the League Cup or the FA Cup, all well and good. But to have potentially two FA Cup games in January might actually be a blessing in disguise, because you know we can play whoever we want, and it kind of, in brackets, doesn't really matter. Although obviously it does. You want to win those games too, but you know what I'm saying there. It's great they've been away. Hickey played last night against England in that 150th anniversary game against Scotland. He played pretty well, I thought. I'm still having seen the England game and seeing Harry Maguire come on, an out of form player in an out of form form. It just underlines how Rico Henry should be part of that squad, whether it's training, whether it's coming on a sub. He should have been out. He should have been there for that game last night. He's had such a great start to the season. He deserves some kind of reward. Whereas, Maguire's had such a shocking 2, 3, or 4 years that he doesn't actually deserve to be around there for himself as well. It's doing him no favours. And I just think, that underlines, don't pick out of form players, because that's kind of what you get. But, the positive is that, Chris Iyer, he scored for Norway. Flecken has been out and kept a clean sheet against Greece for Holland. He had a bit more of a wobble against Ireland, I believe. But yeah, all our players are kind of in and around some really, really good form international teams, and it's great to see.
Yeah, and again, you picked out a few standouts. Obviously, Iyer again, interested in him playing with, Haaland is, listen, you can't knock that, we could say, like I said, the standouts as well, Brian and Bumo scoring for Cameroon, have you said, which is like, he's kind of going up the ranks and people start to notice him all over the place. You could tell by people kind of requesting him in their fantasy teams and saying, yeah, I was always behind Brian and Bumo. We've got that scenario happen as well. And interestingly, Hickey, who got quite a few mentions as well, playing for Scotland, and he had a good game, a couple of little nutmegs there as well, and sort of quite cheeky play. And to think that, love it or hate it, because I know some people, it's not, Scotland doesn't bother me, what I'm saying, but I know a lot of people are like, Scotland, we can't have them. We find it hilarious that they've not been in the World Cup since 1998, but it looks like they are going to be in the European Championships next in Germany in 2024, and that is going to be a fact. So Hickey is going to be playing in Germany in 2024, and he looks like he's going to be a key player for them as well, which can only be a good thing for them. I mean, it's just, but again, just thinking about that, Lainey, because we're trying to reel off these players who've played for us. Now you're talking about players back in the day. I mean, Herman Hreiðarsson is one of the players which you saw play for Iceland over in France, but there aren't too many that you could say that you saw with your own eagle eye, is there?
No. I mean, there was quite a few of us, and Peter Gillam and his little crew come over on the Eurostar to Paris to see Iceland take on France at Stade Français, which was it was a very long, quite grueling day. Lots of Cronenberg was consumed. It was a real kind of celebration of one of our players playing, playing for, because Iceland were really strong at that time as well. So, it's not like they were playing for sort of like Faroe Islands or whatever. It was quite a big deal. But then we did have, under Ron Nodes, that kind of era, we had a fair few, didn't we, that played for Ireland. I think Tony Folan, I think Quinn played for Ireland, and your mate Martin Rowlands, I think.
He
played for Ireland at that time as well. So there was quite a few in and around for a third or fourth tier team. It was kind of unusual to have internationals, but I think it was almost like we had so many, our game was called off at the weekend, and it was like that was almost like a badge of honor. And now it's kind of like they go all the way through to non-league, but It's still not a novelty, but it still makes you feel really good to know that your team is represented, you know, so strongly with international class players.
Yeah, and I mean, just finishing on internationals as well. I mean, New Griffin Park, as we call it, is a place that people don't really necessarily kind of associate with internationals, even though we did have the whole of the women's Euros there as well. And we did, and we also had an England women's international there as well, where England played Australia. Well, the Aussies are back at New Griffin Park, actually, in October. I think it's the 16th of October. I'm not sure. It's 16th or 17th, something like that. 16th, 17th of October, the international break. Australia are playing New Zealand at New Griffin Park there as well. So if somebody fancies going down there and having a few beers and watching some south of the equator football, then you can bowl down there and watch these two teams play. I think it must be a friendly. It can't be some sort of qualifier. I'm sure it's a little friendly. I'm trying to sort of tap into the local Aussie and New Zealand market. You fancy popping down there for that one, lady?
I probably will give that a miss, I reckon. But yeah, no, it's good to see the GTEC being used. And, you know, that was part of the reason that, you know, we did move, wasn't it? So, you know, these kind of games could take place and we get revenue streams coming in. And I guess now that London Irish are kind of not in the picture, I'm not quite sure how that affects us. But it's always, that probably actually is a blessing in disguise, because it was screwing the pitch up, and that. So having extra football games on, I'm sure is okay every now and again.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say, you know, for the Irish, I mean, they've got to pay you for it to make it worthwhile, to be honest with you. I don't think that was happening too much. Anyway, I'll tell you something, Tony. We're talking about one of our players, though, Ivan Toney. I mean, you know, there's a bit of talk about him. Then we had the summer and he's disappeared. Then, you know, and Mbeumo scored like 75 goals in about two games. So everyone's talking about him. And they slightly forgot about Ivan Toney. But Ivan Toney, I've heard, is due back into training in the next few days. Now, interestingly, I mean, I've talked about my little travels in and around America. Going, one of the places that I didn't quite get to in America was Nashville. And ironically, Charlotte were actually playing Nashville the following game after I left, actually, because I saw them play a couple of games in Charlotte, actually, Orlando and LAFC. But the following one was Nashville. And if I'd gone to Nashville, maybe I might have bumped into Ivan Toney. Because from what I can gather, talking to the Nashville bees out there, they've told me that Ivan Toney is over in Nashville. Now can you think why Ivan would be in Nashville, lady? Do you think maybe, you know, gone to see sort of Elvis, is, you know, a bit of an Elvis tour or something, you maybe?
Yeah, possibly, mate. I don't know. He maybe likes a bit of honky-tonk music and, Johnny Cash Museum, perhaps. I don't know. He's probably, yeah, maybe he's, a bit into his southern banjo music. But he's
Nashville FC, maybe? So go to the stadium just to have a look, yeah, and go to a game. Stand behind the goal with the ultras. You know, they make a lot of noise, actually. They're quite lively.
I'm not sure he's allowed any kind of football activity. So, I wouldn't have thought he'd be doing that. But I know he needs to get to the airport pretty quick to get back and do some training, because we're currently still paying his wages, I believe. So it's about time he earned something.
Paying his mortgage, mate.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes, exactly that. Yeah. You know, it's great that he's going to be back in the fold, as it were. And he's back. It's good for him. It's good for us. It's good for kind of just the vibe around the place that you've got your best player back. You know, on a slightly more serious tip, you know, it's we've missed him. You know, I got on my high horse a little bit after the Bournemouth game and kind of said that I think that a couple of the draws, or at least one of the draws that we've had this season, would have been a win if we'd had him in the team. I'm not picking out an exact moment, but you know, he does bring us up another level. And I'm not saying that we play badly, because in all of those games we've played really well, but what he brings to the team, you can't just take out and it not have an effect. You just can't. And we've done okay. You know, it is our best start in the top tier. So you can't say, you know, he's cost us massively, but could it have been better? And I think, yes, it probably could have done, and it probably would have done. And we are lucky, as you say, that Ryan Mbeumo is seized the moment. He's really kind of thriving in the vacuum. He's really matured, and I hope that he's able to kind of not be the little brother, kind of as Ivan described him as in the Diary of a CEO podcast. Hopefully he's kind of like, he's not the underdog to Ivan anymore. He's more of an equal, because I he's proved that. And so welcome back, Ivan. And it's one step closer for him either to get back in our first team for the rest of the season or a record-breaking £100 million deal somewhere else.
That's right. Talking about that, I mean, it's obviously the news is out and everyone does know it. You know, he moved to CAA Agency, which is a big agency. I mean, I know them on the music side. They're the agents for a lot of bands out there. I was quite, you know, fortunate for CAA to have sorted us out when I went to Nice a few weeks ago, when I went to go see The Weeknd as well with the family as well. So thank you very much, CAA, which is all good, which is cool. But like I said to you, big agency. And normally players, me speaking to my chums out there, they kind of move there at the sort of kind of height of their career when they're looking for a next big move. So listen, maybe he's just going out there to kind of get his business finances in sort, or maybe, like I said to you, he's going there just like every other player that goes to CAA at the height of their career because they look to make that next move. And obviously, you know, the yellow lights will be flashing in Brentford, seeing moves like that when they know they've got to deal with CAA rather than the agencies that they're normally used to dealing with, where we've got relationships with and we can to a certain extent manage the movement and what's happening in and around the players. And I think we kind of probably know what is going on around that, but that's on the negative side of Ivan. I would rather concentrate on the fact that he's getting his training in, and like I said to you, the window is going to be open not until January, so we could just look forward to him coming back and playing for us in the new year. So but anyway, listen, Lainey, looking forward to the new year, let's look back to the fact when the Muff came down to New Griffin Park. I watched this game actually in Washington DC, in a bar in Washington DC, actually, with a Brighton and Hove Albion fan and an Everton fan, and they were not happy at all, either of them, because Neil Maupay obviously just signed for us recently. I didn't even talk about Neil. I mean, I waxed lyrical about Neil to both of them, and they were just so unhappy with me just talking about how I believe that Neil was going to score more goals for us than he has for both of those two teams combined, you know what I'm saying, over the next couple of seasons. But anyway, we shall move on from that. We're going to go back to talk about the Bournemouth game. Bournemouth down at New Griffin Park. I still can't, I mean, for me, mate, Bournemouth, there's only one game. I know everyone keeps talking about it, but that was still quite magical. So every time I sort of kind of think of Bournemouth, it just reminds me of that time when they walked out of our stadium, and what's the goalkeeper's name? The one that went off to West Brom. Was he going to West Brom?
It's a QPR now, isn't he?
Yeah, but the QPR, that's right. And he kicked the wall because he cheated, basically, and he wasn't happy with Ivan Toney. And we ended up winning the game, and he was very unhappy. He went back into down the tunnel and to the changing rooms, and he actually kicked a hole in the wall. And the funny thing is that they actually have kind of almost like put a little plaque, a little memory to the kick that it's their goalkeeper, Begovic kicked a hole in the wall in our brand new stadium. There weren't even any fans at the time. I mean, we were the first set of fans to come in there, but he had the cheat to go and kick a wall in the stadium. So what they've done is that they've patched up the wall, but they've deliberately not painted it so you can see exactly where it was, where he kicked it. So I suppose that, you know, that probably gives the players a little bit of oomph every time. And I'm hoping that as we walked out for that game, everyone pointed towards the hole that Cheetovic had actually kicked in the hole in the wall. So that would actually give him a little bit of oomph. But to be quite honest with you, I mean, the way that game went, you know, as we went 1-0 up, we just thought, here we go again. We're going to actually kind of do them right, good and proper. But it didn't quite work out like that, did it, Lady?
No, they're all right. Bournemouth, they play. It was a good game, but you know, it was just another one that we chucked. You know, we chucked a couple of points away. It felt at the end of it. I mean, obviously, you know, if you listen to the post match, it was that all emotions were wrapped up in that 90 plus 3 minutes, because, you know, we looked really good, and, you know, Matthijs Jensen had put us in front with that, you know, that free kick that crossed the line, and the referee delayed giving the goal, but we all knew it was in. And then Dominic Solanke equalised, and then David Brooks, who's been suffering from cancer, come off the bench, and it was that, you know, Rico Henry, you know, really bad back pass that, you know, that led to him putting Bournemouth ahead. And then just when we thought we were going to lose, and it would have made for a really depressing Saturday night, actually, because we didn't deserve to lose, and we wanted to get through to the international break with, you know, with our unbeaten record intact, because it's been solid, you know. And then Brian and Bumo, who'd missed, you know, we'd missed a fair few chances. I mean, KLP missed an absolute sitter. I don't know how that he didn't get enough on that to make it cross the line. And then Brian and Bumo produced an absolute bit of magic, twisting and then running through on goal and finding the finish. So, yeah, it felt like relief at the end, but it was mixed with frustration as well. So, yeah, it was a good time to sign off, I think, for a couple of weeks. And I think they could probably look back now. I think the players probably will get back from their international training, and I'm sure they'll be looking forward to kind of putting a few things right, although they've not done a lot wrong.
And you mentioned Dominic Solanke, who scored the goal there. Now, Lane, you just got to ask a question, and it's just a general question. Dominic Solanke, would you?
Probably not, but I could see why you might, if you know what I mean. He's class, but I don't get the feeling that he's kind of Brentford style player. And that's not knocking him. That's not a dig. It's just I think he's probably too established for us to be going for.
And I'm not going to do a teams like Brentford, but he's playing for Bournemouth, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's weird. You see yourselves, if you've got a player like that, do you think, you know, rather than trying to nab a player from Tottenham or Man United, you know, you think, is it possible?
Well, my seeing the kind of players that we were going for in the transfer window, but couldn't get them to agree to come to us. Mm. It looks like we're going for better players than him. Mm. So, you know, I'm what I'm saying is he's not good enough to come to Brentford.
Whoa, there you go. That's what I was trying to get out of you. So listen, Solanke, you're not good enough, mate. Stay down in Bournemouth. Just coming back to that game, like I said to you, I mean, I thought Bournemouth, I mean, last season, I'm going to be honest with you, I thought Bournemouth, to be fair, yeah, they got themselves out of a mire, and they battled themselves out of a mire, but they were awful for probably 80% of that season last season. And I think through team spirit and through their manager, who I think was probably a little bit unlucky to have got sacked, I think that they kind of got out of, they got out of a mire, but they were terrible that last season. But I'm going to say, and I'm like, I said to you, me sitting down in Washington, watching at the bar with these American fans, looking at it, and I was saying to them, listen, because they're going to me, the Everton fans going, we're relying on you getting points against this lot. We really need you to, because they're basically, he said, look, we're pretty much down, you know. So, and then, you know, when we went 2-1 down, he was like going, what are you doing? I said to him, listen, mate, Bournemouth actually look quite good. The football they're playing is quite good. Their pressing game is quite good. You know, like, you know, there's a lot of things that had to be said. You had to tip their hat to them. So, you know, even though it was disappointing that we didn't get the 3 points, it was nice being a little bit more removed from it, as I was, and watching the game, and you were able to see the replays and see what's going on. I said, actually, to be honest with you, in retrospect, it was actually probably quite a good point for us. And we might look back at that game and say it was actually quite a good point, because I thought that they were relatively decent, you know, finishing maybe not as good as it can be, you know, but they weren't near. There's definitely some worse teams out there than them lot this season. And I thought that they were okay.
Yeah, they were. And, you know, it was a fairly, you know, in brackets, easy start to our season as well. I mean, I know, you know, there is no easy games, but we haven't played any of the big guns as yet. And, you know, that's why it was important to get as many points on the board as possible. You know, I'm not going to go through the, you know, you see Bournemouth and you expect 3 points, because, you know, I think we're a little bit more kind of measured, and we know that, you know, those kind of games can bite you in the arse. But being unbeaten gives you a little bit of a swagger, And we know that we've got a few toughies going up to Newcastle this weekend. It's not going to be easy. We've done all right in games against the better teams, so I'm not sort of like, you know, I'm not writing it off. But that was kind of where we were at back in the pub after the game, Bill, was just that we probably should have got 3 points and not the one. But you could have said that about Palace as well. And you probably should have said that about Tottenham. You know, it shows you the standards now are just, you know, a high. It's where the expectation comes, where you start to feel a bit disappointed. I don't think there's a lot to be down in the dumps about, if nothing at all, in fact. But it's just that it could have been better.
Could have been better. And talk about back at the pub. Actually, we're going to go back to the pub. It's going to go back to the stands. We're going to talk to the fans after the game against Bournemouth about that draw.
I think we gave them too many chances, especially first half, good ones, that we shouldn't have done. But we created loads. I think we hit the woodwork 3 times. And we got plenty of other chances that just either went to the keeper or just past the post. So, yeah, I mean, we created enough to win that game. And I think if we'd lost it, which it looked like we were going to at some point, that would have been a travesty. But a really exciting game to watch. It's really nice to keep the fortress going. But a really good game.
I think we were lucky there. Bournemouth played very well. They're a very strong team. They're mightily improved, certainly, over last year. We got the break with Brian scoring that goal in the injury time that was added on, in the extra time that was added on. We need a bit of toughness about us. You know, there'll be harder battles. Bournemouth are a good team. There'll be even harder battles to come. And we need to be winning our games down here at the G-Tech. We've got to remember that. We cannot just keep drawing. But on to next one.
You know, bless Rico getting a great reception, because it's his first mistake for about 5 years. I thought Bournemouth were bang average, really. I think that's points dropped. And we haven't lost, and we came back, and we showed the character and all those positives. But at some point, you know, we need to win at home.
Actually, think Bournemouth offered that much. We could have been out of sight quite easily in that game. You know, Sharda hitting the post, Brian with that miss, Pinnock with the free header. I think what Neil is going to bring that we don't have at the moment is he's going to hold the ball up. I think today we really, really missed what Tony brings up front, holding the ball up and the work rate right across the front. And I think Neil will come in and he'll bring the ball up front. So if we're not going to play those little balls in behind the back like we did at Spurs away or whatever, we're going to keep playing this way. We need a player who's going to hold the ball up.
This might sound wrong, but we're a little bit predictable now. And we're talking about missing Ivan, and because he gives us breathing space by holding the ball up. There's a few little problems for Thomas to solve, you know.
Winning 2-1 into the 90 minutes. Tough one, but we would have taken the point before the game, definitely. So, yeah, a bit heartbreaking, but, you know, we would all taken a point. So, you know, just unfortunately we couldn't hold off for the 3 points, but
The main emotion was just frustration, really, that we'd let it go back to 2-1. Having been a goal ahead, the width of a post away from being 2 goals ahead twice. Brian missing an absolute sitter in almost the first play of the second half. It's frustrating. But, you know, I guess when I reflect on it later, I'll probably think, you know, a point's a point. You know, it just didn't go the way we wanted it to. But there wasn't major flaws in our game today. We just didn't score when we needed to score. And, you know, Bournemouth are probably going to be all right this season. They look pretty good, much better than the team that we played last season. And both teams cancelled each other out a little bit.
I wasn't going to say, yeah, we ain't going to lose this or we ain't going to draw this. But as far as I'm concerned, it was a tense last 6 minutes. And there's actually an opportunity for you to win the game in the last 6 minutes as well. But Mbeumo wasn't, in my eyes, didn't have a brilliant day. Our keeper, that save in the towards the end of the second half, how he got to it, never know. But that's the thing with Neto, he's a first-class keeper. But, you know, we've been made really welcome by Brentford fans today. It's been really nice, it's been pleasant, it's been friendly. And I'll be back here next season.
So there you go, fans after the game. Bit of disappointment. But listen, We're still unbeaten. And I'm going to ask a question, Lainey, because, you know, you talked about the fact that Ivan Toney, if he was in that team, you believe that we might have got a point because they would have given us a different, you know, angle, different way of approaching that game as well. Do you think if Neil Maupé, who's our new signee, he's one of our new signees this window as well, Neil Maupé, if you feel if he was in that side, then it may have been a different result?
Yeah, I do actually. And I've noticed that there's a lot of people that are, a lot of Evertonians have given him grief. And there's a few Brentford fans I've read that are kind of are quite happy to highlight his misses, because he does miss, you know. But he left us because he was ready for the Prem when we weren't in the Prem. He's been in teams, you know, I don't think he's ever going to be the most prolific scorer. But like a Wiesa, he can produce finishes, and I think he needs to be loved, and he needs to be in a team that give him the right service. And his first phase at Brentford, he got all of that, and he just got better and better. And I feel the vibe around him coming back, seeing his face. Seeing him in training, there's been a couple of videos on the Brentford YouTube channel. He looks like he's back in a place that he's got.
He belongs.
He's in an environment where he belongs, in an environment where he knows he can thrive, and he'll thrive again. So I'm expecting him to come back and do well. And so the question was, would we have won with him in that team? I say yes, we would have done, because that Keane Lewis Potter miss, I don't see Neil Maupé missing that. And I just think he's more of an intelligent lurker. And just because he didn't have a great time at Everton, you know, we've said, and we're not the first to say, but it's a fact that Everton, the way they play, the way they, the service that he would get there, that's not how he's going to thrive. We know what it takes to make Neil Maupé a successful, prolific striker. We'll do that again. We're clever, and he'll be very excited to come back, and I'm very excited to see him.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's one of those scenarios where, and it's interesting, again, a lot of the new fans that we've had the last couple of years, you won't really know much about Neil Maupé, and Brentford Neil Maupé. Just to let you know, Brentford fans love Neil Maupé. And even when he left with their blessing. He went off to Brighton when we were still in the Championship. And, you know, Brighton is a team that we never do any business with because the, you know, it's not a fact that people don't know, but the owners, the two owners don't necessarily see eye to eye.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
So we don't ever do any business with them, but the Maupé deal was something that was done in the end because Neil Maupé, when he signed for Brentford, when we were in the Championship, he was actually, Brighton scouted him, and he was actually meant to go to Brighton. And Brighton had just been promoted to the Premier League at that time. And we convinced him to come to Brentford. He played for us in the Championship for a couple of years. And we probably said, look, you're going to help us to get up. We didn't quite get up. And then Brighton came back in for him. And Brentford said, you know, Premier League opportunity, we're going to give you your opportunity. So he actually went to Brentford at that stage. And we kind of, not say it's not a written rule that we don't do business with Brighton, but we don't normally do business with Brighton. So we did the business with Brighton there, and he went off and he's played his Premier League football. I love the fact that he did exactly the same thing against Leeds when he was at Brighton as he did with us, where he stood in front of their fans for both games at Brentford. And he also did it at Brighton as well, where he stood in front of their fans with his arms outstretched. In fact, there were no fans in the stadium, but he did it. And I just love that thing about him, the shithousery of Neil Maupay. He doesn't care. I've spoken to him many times, and I've spoken to him, like I said to you, when they used to go to the Novotel Hotel. Really intelligent bloke, really, really nice, really, really level-headed. Nothing like he is on the pitch at all. And he's great. And he actually loved, even then you could tell that he loved Brentford and he loved football, you know. So when he left, I think there was a tinge of sadness with a lot of Bees fans. And we always used to kind of watch and look out for him if he'd scored. We sort of share the videos and stuff like that. Probably a little bit sad, but you know, that's the sign of a club who's like in the lower division, who has one of your sort of babies who decides to leave home, like, you know, and he's gone off. And I think we almost feel a little bit kind of gutted that, you know, Brighton was okay, but I know a lot of Brighton fans will go to him, oh, he's awful, he misses too many, oh God, get rid of him. So when they got rid of him to Everton, and then Everton, he scored, I think, in the first game. Then after that, I don't think he scored again. And Everton fans going, oh my God, he's the worst striker that we've ever had, get rid of him. And I think it's just typical. It's one of those things where sometimes a player is in an environment where the coach and everyone around him knows how to play him. And that's what we did with Maupay. That's what we did with people like Scott Hogan, you know, even Ollie Watkins to a certain extent. That's exactly what we did with players like that. And as soon as they left the fold, it didn't quite work out the same for them. Ollie's on the right path now, but he went for a really bad spell at Aston Villa. And I think with Neil Maupay, he's that type of player. Trust me, he goes off elsewhere. It ain't quite working. And he's going, I need to go back with the people that know me and love me and understand the way I'm going to play. And that's why I said I had the bet with the guy in the Washington bar, the Everton fan and the Brighton fan, to say he will score more goals than us and you're going to be gutted that you let him go. So there you go. But
his record's pretty good, you know.
The 10 goals a season, roughly, isn't it?
He's got, you know, 85 appearances for Brentford, 37 goals, 102 appearances for Brighton, 26 goals, but at a higher level. One goal in 28 for Everton in a god-awful team that have been trying to get relegated for the last 3 years. They don't create chances, and now they've got Sean Dyche in there. Sean Dyche is a lovely bloke, but he doesn't play lovely football. He's there to do a job, and that's just to keep them up. And, you know, you want a big striker up there, and that's what he wants. You know, it's functional gravel football, and Neil Maupay is not that player. At Brentford, he will, as we've said, he'll get those chances. We've created more XG than any other team in the division, and obviously that triggers a lot of people that are going, oh no, we're not top of the league. No, but we know that XG is a measure of the quality of chances that you take or that you create. And over the course of the season, those that create the highest amount of quality chances finished higher in the league. Fact. You need to look at the tables for the last 3 or 4 years. The ones with the highest XG state are at the top of the table. So, you know, you might be able to pull out an individual match or result where you might have XG off the charts, but you don't score. Yeah, there's always anomalies. There's always a kind of like an example of it not being an exact science, but it is over the course of 9 months. So, you know, we do create quality chances, and he will tuck in, I have no doubt.
Okay, so Laney, I'm going to put you on the spot. He's missed a month, right? So if we talk about September, how many goals is Maupay going to score for us this season?
It'd be great if he did get into double figures, to be honest with you. I mean, obviously, there's a couple of... He can't play against Everton, so there's going to be two games where, you know, he can't play. And at some stage, hopefully, Ivan Toney is going to come back. So you imagine him to be on the bench in that case. So, you know, if he plays in every match, I'd like to think he could get into double figures. But I just want to see him scoring again and scoring important goals.
Give us a number.
10.
Oh, you're taking it away from me. I'm actually going to go up. I'm going to go higher. And Bruce Forsyth, higher. I'm going to go 12. I'm going to go mad. I'm going to go potty. I'm going to go 12 for Neil Maupay. So there we go. So don't forget. And listen, if anyone has got any thoughts, just send them in and we can even read them out. But 10 and 12, which is quite high as well. But we should come back to this at the end of the season. Don't forget that as well.
I'd love to see him score. He's cup tied against, isn't he? So he's not going to play against Arsenal. That's a shame. So, yeah, no, I'd like to see him make his debut then. But his debut would be this weekend, I would hope.
Score against Leeds in the cup, maybe?
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Oh, lovely. I think those tickets will be about £50. But anyway, listen, talking about the cup, We're going to go to the Cup of Joy. His name is Mr. JB. JB is going to bring us the Cup of Joy with lots of facts and some fun.
Are you ready for this? I told you it was coming.
Who?
JB. And he's ready to stock it to you one time. Get it.
Hello, Jonathan Burchell here again. Anyone playing the football pools knows that a game ending in a score draw gets you 3 points. Alas, not so in the Premier League. On current form, a Brentford match at the G-Tech must have helped some people win substantial money. Although for a pools player to select our matches must be pure guesswork, as there is no precedent for 3-score draws in an opening 4 league fixtures in any of our previous 96 league seasons. But we do have 6 league points already on the board. It's the best we've had after 4 games since we joined the Premier League. The last 2 seasons we'd accumulated 5 points at this stage, and had suffered a defeat in both. So neither can match this year's unbeaten start. It's also a feat that we didn't achieve in our 5 original top tier seasons. Matchday chat regarding technology's involvement in games usually focuses on VAR, less so on goal line technology. Andreas Belgian was our first beneficiary of such a goal against Forest back in August 2017. But against Bournemouth, it took the fourth official to give our first goal when the referee's smartwatch appeared to fail as play continued. When Mathias Jensen's effort was eventually allowed, it was the 100th Brentford League goal to be scored at the G-Tech. Coincidentally, exactly 100 years since Sandy Mulford claimed the 100th league goal at Griffin Park.
There you go, JB. Facts and funk. And he's celebrating in the fact it's... good start to the season. Interesting facts and funk there, isn't it, Laney?
Yeah, he's pulled it out of the bag again, and he's got some absolute corkers there. I really enjoyed that. So I actually saw JB and Mrs. JB down at the Brentford Festival a couple of Sundays ago. I decided to
Morris dance. Was he Morris dancing? Was he?
There was Morris dancers there, but I didn't see him doing that. No,
he was at the James Brown sort of stage.
He was funking himself right up over by the beer tent. It's good to see him. Had a good old chinwag, and it was a roasting day. And sort of quite a lot of Brentford fans there. I was just selling some Brentford books and a few other bits and bobs. And it was nice to see people wandering past and having a chat. Can I just mention while we're talking about Brentford books? I bought a collection of Brentford photographs. You know, I collect Brentford photographs.
Yes.
They've been in all the books I've done. And then something new cropped up a couple of years ago, and I bought some of them, but the rest of them became available. The rest is about 300 photographs of Brentford between, I'd say, mid to late 80s, like 87, 88, through to early to mid 90s. So it's like Perriman and Holder, and then there's Cadet, and then it goes through to the championship at Peterborough, and there is absolute some beauts in there. Like the build up to going to Liverpool in the FA Cup quarter final, loads and loads of fan pictures in the stadium at Griffin Park, loads of dressing room pictures, loads of training ground pictures. Loads of youth. I showed like Kelly Haig and Paul Buckle and that era. Paul Buckle saw a couple of the pictures, but it is even more now, and he was just blown away where we got these. And it's like they're sweeping out the LDV van that we got as losers at Wembley against Wigan. You remember that kind of Sherpa van that used to be parked in the forecourt?
Very rusty van by the sort of
I'm sure it didn't pass its last MOT. So yeah, they were like sweeping that out and doing all their chores in the boot room and stuff with Colin Lee, and there's like they're brilliant pictures. So I might actually try and put something together for this Christmas, but we'll see. I might not have enough time, but the pictures are so good they need to be shared. So watch this space.
Definitely watch this space. So I tell you what, we talked about the past, let's look towards the future. We've got the Geordies coming down. We've got Newcastle. No, they're not coming down. We're going up to them. And they've messed us about a little bit because, you know, it was on a Sunday and I had it all sorted and we had our trains and planes sorted and hotels and everything like that. It was going to be a lovely little Sunday day, overnighter, coming back on Monday. Then, oh, no! They flipped it to Saturday night. Okay, it's on TV. But a lot of people, it doesn't suit them. So a lot of Bees fans, unfortunately, are not able to go now on the Saturday. But we're going to talk about this Newcastle game and basically how it's looking for the Bees, unbeaten in the season so far. So going up to Newcastle on Saturday. Tell you what, before we come back and talk about the Newcastle game, let's go up to Newcastle. Let's talk to Chris from the Gallowgate End podcast. He's going to give us the lowdown on everything we need to know about Champions League Newcastle.
Hi, everybody. My name is Chris. I am host of the Always Smiling Faces podcast, which is part of the Gallowgate Shot YouTube channel. You may recognise the name. We have done plenty of things with Brentford fans over the last couple of years, whether that be on your podcast or other ones. Just talking about all things Newcastle United when it comes to this upcoming fixture. So, once again, it is Newcastle United playing host this weekend at St James' Park as we welcome Brentford up to the northeast of England. Just to look back over last season, though, I think it's you can't look beyond Newcastle last season and think that we had probably the most successful season out of everybody else. Obviously, you take away the likes of Man City winning the league, because it's probably everybody expected Man City to do that, closely followed by Arsenal. But obviously, Newcastle United were the dark horse, finishing in fourth, and basically Liverpool were breathing down next for toward the end of that season. But it was Newcastle that came out on top, and I think it shocked many people across Tyneside, never mind across national and international waters as well. So I think last season, if I was going to mark that out of 10, you have to give that a 10 out of 10 performance from Newcastle. We were the ones that many people were looking at throughout the season, thinking Newcastle are doing well. Newcastle are going to drop off at some point, and this will have to dip at some point throughout the season. And people just kept on ignoring the fact of what job Eddie Howe had done, and think, the luck will run out eventually. But we went through certain spells towards that the end of that season as well, where we did dip in form and were struggling to pick up points and struggling to find the back of the net. But having said that, we stuck by and we didn't really drop below sixth throughout the season. So, like I said, it's a 10 out of 10 performance from last season. But things are a little bit different this year. Newcastle United have had a very tough introduction to this season. I think statistically we had the hardest run at the start of the Premier League campaign. I believe Chelsea may have had the easiest one statistically, but Newcastle to the opening fixture was Aston Villa, closely followed by Man City, Liverpool and Brighton away. That's a tough fixture and set of run of games no matter who you are. It was a great start, a 5-1 win against Aston Villa, and we're thinking, great, it's the same Newcastle as what we witnessed last year. And this high pressure and intensity which Eddie Howe demands of his players has not gone away. You jump into the Man City game and think, it's Man City, okay? It's a free hit for most football clubs where we'll put a good performance. We'll kind of hold our heads up high with that performance, but overall Man City did get 3 points. After that, we have Liverpool coming to St James' Park, which, once again, it's always a tough fixture. No excuses there. Newcastle took the lead. Liverpool went down at 10 men. Then Newcastle decided to throw it away in the last 10, 15 minutes of the game, which was disappointing. That wasn't Eddie Howe's Newcastle United and what we have been used to seeing last year. God knows what happened. Nerves and the occasion just absolutely just went by a lot of those Newcastle players. So it was a tough watch, that one, and even more so going to the Amex for the away trip to Brighton, and they literally handed our backside to ourselves and sent us packing. The performance from Brighton was spectacular. I take nothing away from them. They looked like what we did last year, with that high press.
And we just couldn't cope with that. And we can't excuse that to players being injured or anything like that, because there wasn't any on a full-strength team, apart from Botman not starting at the back. So overall, I think it's hard to judge this season at this moment in time, because like only a handful of fixtures in, and it's such a hard set of fixtures which Newcastle have had to come up against. I think coming into the Brentford game, this is going to really test us to what sort of start we've had. I think if Newcastle pick all 3 points up, and as a fan base we turn around and think, that's alright, it's a decent start. If we fail to get three, even a draw, I think we'll probably be looking at the start of the season and think, this is a bad start so far, and we're going to have to start putting points on the board. But it's one of those things. Obviously, I've got faith in Eddie Howe. He's done an absolute spectacular job since he arrived at this club, and we'll stick by him all the way. Of course we do. We can't not after what he delivered for us last season. If we're going to look at before we go into the Brentford game and look at that one, what I would like to do is look at Newcastle United's summer business and how we handled that. There were certain areas that I think a lot of fans wanted upgraded, left back being one of them, as in a player to come in as a starting left back. Obviously we brought Hall in, but it doesn't look like he will be starting any game soon, so we do have Dan Burn at left back and Matt Target, and for European football and these big fixtures which we're going to be playing and obviously maintaining how well we did last season, I think a lot of fans were disappointed that we didn't upgrade that area. And we upgraded certain areas of the field which didn't necessarily need that. So if you look at the left-hand side, Harvey Barnes was brought in. Harvey Barnes is a great player. He got 12 goals, I believe, last season for Leicester after a relegation season. And to buy Barnes, we had to sell player, because we're under such scrutiny at the moment with financial fair play that the magnifying glass is always going to be on us because of the money at our disposal, really. So I had to sell Alan St. Maximum, which he split fans' opinion. Of course he did. Personally, I love Maxi. He was always that one player that would get you on the edge of your seat. He's that one player that a lot of opposition fans would think he can do some damage if he's on his game. But like I said, we sold him. He went to Saudi Arabia. Fair play to him. He's got a big wage at the end of the day. But we brought Harvey Barnes in. Like I said, I'm happy with bringing Harvey Barnes in. But I don't necessarily think it was an area that we needed to address so urgently when there was other key positions. Look at the centre of the field. That was an area which needed some sort of improvement to a degree. We brought Sandro Tonali in to take him away from his boyhood club in AC Milan. That's an absolute coup for us. Like, it's to do that, and yes, of course, money's got a big factor of this and the wage that you will be on. But Italian international, AC Milan lad, and obviously he's in the centre of the field for us. I think there's doubt about if he's going to be playing this weekend. I think he will be having a late fitness test. Rumours going around that he may miss this fixture, along with, believe it or not, the AC Milan game, which we'll have next week, quickly after the Brentford tie. But yeah, like I said, he was another one which we brought in. Jumping over to the right hand side, Tino Romero came in. Basically going to be an understudy of Trippier, as far as we are led to believe, and what a player to learn from. Trips has been an absolute revelation since he came in Newcastle. Obviously he was the first player that came in after the takeover, and I think he is basically the arrowhead and the spear point of how well we have done and how quickly the club have changed and the trajectory of this football club as well. Him and alongside Eddie Howe, those are the two names which you have to look at when it comes to looking at how this transformation has blew everybody out of the water as a fan of the club. So yeah, overall, it's a decent window. I don't think we can grumble at it. I think with the injury to Botman, I think we're looking at that centre back position thinking, could we maybe have brought in another one there? But like I said, financial fair play is going to cripple us if we're not careful. So we'll bring players in, the decent players. A lot of them probably won't get much game time as starters this season.
Obviously, we've had a look at the squad depth because of the European fixtures and what fixtures and ties which we got from that draw. PSG, Dortmund, and AC Milan. You couldn't ask for a tougher group. But it is what it is. And like I said, we do have a squad depth there now to help. If we look at the game now, so if we look at the Brentford game, like I said earlier, it's going to be a very difficult one. And I think if you look at the last handful of clashes, I think the last time Brentford got a result, as in obviously getting the victory against Newcastle, was in the cup, if I believe right. I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was in the cup. If we looked solely at last season, I believe it was 2-1 at your ground, and then 5-1 at St. James's Park and Newcastle that day were fantastic. They really were. I don't think it'll be anything like that this year. Like I said, our intensity seemed to have dropped a little in the last couple of games. Yes, of course, we've got the home advantage, and it looks like we are Booty's favourites by quite a distance, but that's probably just looking at our previous clashes between the two clubs. It's going to be a tough one to call, it really is. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a draw, which personally I wouldn't be happy with because of the position which we find ourselves in at the moment. And that's not taking anything away from Brentford, because yous have had an absolutely great start to the season, and that lad up top, Mbeumo, is just had an absolute blinder of a start. It's like Ivan Toney never existed. He's been outstanding so far. So obviously we do have to be careful for him, especially with the injury which we have at the back with Sven Botman not being fit. And since Sven Botman hasn't been available, that defensive back four, back five has looked a little bit shaky. And whether that's down to Nick Pope's brain just absolutely scrambling every time he goes outside of his box to clear the ball, or if it's because we've had a shift, we're starting left back in the centre midfield and bringing in another left back, and it's just ruined the whole dynamics of that back four and five. I don't know, but Brentford worry us. They really do. They're well organised, and they really are really tough to crack. And I think if Hughes can hold out and not crumble under the intensity of what St. James's Park can be like with the fans behind the lads, we're going to have a tough game on our hands. Having said that, we need the points. We need a reaction. We needed a reaction at the Liverpool game. We didn't get it against Brentford. So we need a reaction now after what happened at the Amex. So if I was a betting man, I would go on a 2-1 Newcastle United victory. But I'm not confident. I'm really not confident in that one. Like I said, I wouldn't be shocked if it is a draw. But I've got to go with my team. I have to back my lads and see a Newcastle United victory. 2-1. Isak on the score sheet. He's the player which you need to look out for. Isak is fantastic. £60 million for that lad. And that seems like an absolute steal. It really does. He makes everything look easy, as if he's not even trying. And let's say if Isak does have an off game, or not necessarily off game, but isn't really brought into the game by the lads around him, which we've seen a couple of times so far this season, you've got Callum Wilson. Callum Wilson will get you goals every single day of the week. He'll get you goals. So I think you have to look out for our strikers. As always, I believe that these sort of games are won in midfield, though. And our midfield just hasn't clicked. Tonali, Joe Linton and Bruno have been starting these fixtures, and it just hasn't seemed to work, apart from that opening fixture against Villa. So we need something to happen there. We really do. Newcastle need to win that midfield battle, because teams have been walking through the centre of the field and making our midfield just look non-existent. They really haven't. So all comes down to the centre of the field. Whoever controls that area will control the game. Thanks for having us on, boys. It's been a pleasure, as always. Good luck for the rest of the season. I think you will have a cracking season, I really do. Before I go, I've got to mention who will get relegated. I think if you look at teams 15 down over,
So you've got like sort of Wolves in there, so Wolves, Bournemouth, and obviously Luton. So, but if I'm gonna pick me three that are gonna go down, I'm gonna go Burnley, Luton, and Everton. I think Everton have flirted with this far too long. And that, without sounding like a bit of an idiot, I would love to see Everton go down. Not a big fan of Everton. I think that they've just been clinging on way too long in the Premier League. I think a lot of people need humbling with Everton. So, get Everton relegated this year. Thanks, boy. Enjoy your trip up the Tyneside.
So there you go, Chris from the Gallowgate End podcast. And listen, they had a good season last season, so naturally he's a little bit chirpy, but things have changed. You know, they did the full Monty on us last season. You know, it was a full house. You know, they did us up there good and proper, and back at home as well. I don't know, would you say there was a little bit lucky? Maybe, but then you need a little bit of luck to kind of be in that situation, I suppose. So they did the full house on us last season, but things have changed again this season, and they haven't necessarily had as good a start this season as probably they thought they're going to do. And a lot of people are talking about Eddie Howe. Is the pressure on Eddie Howe at the moment now? Because obviously, you know, the people are putting a lot of money into Newcastle. Is it big expectations? Laney, Newcastle, different result this time. What do you think?
I mean, they've had a really tough start, haven't they? You know, it's the fixtures you get dealt at the beginning of the season. They can warp and they can twist, you know, the perspective slightly. You know, I was saying earlier that we've had a relatively, you know, in brackets, easy start. They've had a particularly tough one. They smashed Aston Villa, I know, 5-1, but you know, they've started to lose games, which they went a big chunk of last season unbeaten, didn't they? And they've got, you know, three defeats on the spin, I think it is now, and it shows that they are fallible. It's still going to be absolutely one of the toughest places to go this, you know, the last couple of years, last year in particular. You know, we created a few chances, and then once they had their noses in front, they ran away with it. The year before, we got a draw, I know. So it's a toughie, but we know that we are more than capable of going to these places now and putting on a really good show of Brentford Football Club and how we play. It doesn't mean we're going to come away with anything at all, but I back us, mate. You know, it's actually maybe these kind of games where we know that we can't rest on our laurels, and you know, we have to take our chances. So it's a shame that I can't go up there, because they dick Brentford fans around royally, and their own fans as well. And let's not forget, is you know, thousands of them Geordies that travel up from the south and from London, so they would have been screwed around as well. Anyone that got tucked in early, because you have to get tucked in early to get the trains at an affordable price, and hotels. Newcastle is one of those cities where the hotel prices go through the roof. They're expensive anyway, but Manchester and Newcastle, unless you get in early, you could be paying 150, 200 quid a night for anything just average. So it's a game where Brentford fans have been dicks around, as I say.
Yeah, I mean, and you're talking about that as well, like I said to you. I mean, I've seen people that have said that, you know, they're going up to Newcastle and then coming back again, because when you book, I think their flights and stuff, they can't change their flights. They can't do anything about it. So they're kind of going to go anyway, because they've got to just use it up and use up the hotel and come back again. So I just, you know, I know people talk about this a lot, but, you know, it is a really big thing, and it is a big thing for fans, and it's a big commitment for fans to go out there and support their team. And the fact that people can kind of almost like sort of kind of almost like ignore the fact that the TV companies could do this at the last minute, I just think it's just a little bit kind of out of order. And I think the clubs know as well, because you're going to get it in the air, right? And you know, the fact is that yes, we go, you know, when we go on TV, we the clubs do get extra money, but it does put the fans out massively. And this Newcastle game, like I said to you, for us, you know, there is going to be, you know, the post-match podcast is going to be coming from the pub because we're going to go down the globe and watch it. Because like I said to you, you know, Sunday, you know, it was all lined up for Sunday, but Saturday kind of just doesn't work for me at short notice, unfortunately. And the same for you, Lainey. And I think it's for the same for the other people as well. So if you're in and around, you fancy watching the game down the pub with us down the globe, then we shall see you down there. It should be a good evening Saturday night. But just coming back to this game, so Lainey, I mean, like I said to you, haven't had a good start, but still a good side. Bit of pressure for Eddie Howe, but we can't underestimate Newcastle. Any thoughts on a score prediction?
Well, I've got to be really encouraged by the way Brighton dismantled them the last time out. You know, Brighton scored 3, you know, beat Newcastle 3-1, and you have to kind of put Brentford in that Brighton kind of mould. Now, I think they're slightly better than us and they're stronger than us at the moment because they've got a couple more years and they're not missing their best player. But equally, they've sold quite a few players as well, so you could say they've been weakened by that. But they play it in a similar way. If we can match that intensity and we can go at Newcastle, we can cause them a lot of problems. I know, obviously, this is at St James's Park rather than down at the Amex, so it does change it up where they've got, you know, 60,000 people you know, cheering them on. But in playing styles, I liken us to Brighton in so many ways that it shows that's the blueprint of how you dismantle Newcastle. And if they're unless they're at their best, then that could happen again to them. So as a prediction, I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw, mate.
Oh, again, it's going conservative, Lainey, and I'm going to go conservative B as well. I haven't had a prediction so far this season, or not on this podcast here itself, and I'm actually going to go conservative B. I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw up at Newcastle. Anything else that you want to talk about, Lainey, or is that it? You've had enough?
I've probably had enough for this week. I just, you know, I will say it's a shame that we couldn't get sort of Bakayoko to come and join us right at the last knock-ins from PSV. It was a bit of a frustrating transfer window in so much as we put some massive bids in, and the players just didn't want to come to a team, it looks like, that hasn't got European football this season. You know, it is. That's the kind of window, the shop windows that we're now sniffing in. And, you know, you've got, you know, Fiorentina players, you know, you've got Nicolas Gonzalez, who's the other one that we're in for. He's helping his team through to the latter stages of the Europa League. And then you've obviously got Bakayoko with PSV. They're on a bit of a roll as well. So, you know, it's not for the want of trying, but it can be a little bit frustrating. So we have to crack that at the next window, hopefully. So yeah, that's really it, really, because we did a transfer deadline day podcast, but you know, the Bakayoko and Morpay thing kind of happened right at the last knock-ins. So yeah, it's a bit frustrating, but you know, we are doing all right anyway.
That's right, we're doing okay. So listen, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Buy us a beer, besotted.com/beer/beer. And don't be drinking that beer that I was drinking in America, mate, because you'd be doing some forward slashes if you're drinking any of that American IPA stuff from 9 o'clock in the morning like I do. Listen, you slow down, you Americans, man, because it's too much. Like I said to you, also don't forget to check us out on all good podcast channels, subscribe to us and write us a lovely review. Tell you what as well, Lainey, I've just got to quickly say as well, because you've got as well the player of the match against Bournemouth, the player of the match again, was it who's the player?
It was Mbeumo again, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's Brian Mbeumo. So like I said to you, the Tasmanian B, you know, he actually every week he tucks right in and he gives us the player of the match, and he's done a fantastic job as well. And like I said to you, it's Brian Mbeumo was the player of the match, and I think everyone is going to be kind of unanimous on that one, the player of the match this season, which he's done a really good job. So Brian Mbeumo, player of the match for the Bournemouth, the Besotted Global player of the match as well. We're going to try and read that out every week. We must remember, let's do it at the top of the show next time, Lainey, not at the bottom of the show. We'll do it at the top of the show to let people know who was the top player voted by the characters out there for the Brentford. Yes. And But anyway, listen, it's been great being back. I'm a little bit all over the place, as you can tell. I've been too many states in America. I've been all over the place. I've got sunstroke. I've got everything like that. But I've had lots of fun, and I'm very excited to get back and watch some good football over here. Come on, you bees, as we're going up to Newcastle. Do the business, as we say.
Go on, you bees.
Come on, you bees. You bees beat them Geordies, you know. Middle East.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.